So it is the day before the NBA draft, and I'm here with Cade Cunningham. And Cade, you only worked out with one NBA team, the Detroit Pistons. Detroit holds the number one pick. Why should you be the number one pick?
I think, you know, just over the years, I feel like I've shown, you know, through my play and who I am off the court that, you know, I can come in and elevate, you know, the people around me and organizations, things like that. So, you know, I feel like I can come in and be immediate impact, and I think that's what you want from a number one pick.
Cade Cunningham is all in on the Pistons, but in a highly anticipated draft like this one, it's not quite as clear if the Pistons are all in on him. In fact, as the next wave of NBA prospects washes over Brooklyn's Barclays Center, at least three players feel like plausible number one overall selections. So today, let us be your executive basketball briefing, your guide to tonight's draft and the sport's strange, maybe delusional, tomorrow. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, July 29th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by UKG. Our purpose is people. Mike Schmitz, I've been watching you travel the world, basically. That's not even an exaggeration. You've been all over the planet scouting prospects. So thank you for coming back to ESPN Daily.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Mike Schmitz gets paid to meticulously study every potential NBA player on Earth for ESPN. So look, we're barely a week past the finals. We're moving on to the new season. The draft is happening Thursday, and I need to download everything in your brain into my brain. I'm not sure if I have the hard drive space for that, but I do want to just get a sense here very bluntly, Mike. How good is this class of players as a whole compared to previous years?
Really good. Really strong. I mean, I think that, you know, last year there was so much uncertainty, right? You had the pandemic, whereas this year it is like rock solid. Like Cade Cunningham, he'd be the number one pick in last year's draft. He's going to be the number one pick in this year's draft. Jalen Green, he'd be the number one pick in last year's draft. Evan Mobley, he'd be the number one pick in last year's draft. Like, we're not exaggerating when we say that this draft actually has three number one caliber prospects, and then there's depth all throughout.
So those three number one overall caliber picks, I need to sort through the hierarchy among them, because if you listen to Pistons fans right now, and maybe it's just because the internet has this way of making everybody think the same thing sometimes, it does feel like Cade Cunningham is the guy whose jersey you already bought if you're out in Detroit. So does that sound right to your mind? Why is there such little doubt about the guard from Oklahoma State?
Yeah, no doubt in my mind either. And, you know, we've heard the last couple of days, okay, Detroit's still doing their due diligence and all that. Like, they're going to take Cade Cunningham unless there's some type of unforeseen, you know, trade that happens or anything along those lines. Like, Cade Cunningham is going to be the pick. And I think he's the clear-cut number one guy. You watch today's NBA and you say, okay, what's the most valuable position really in the NBA? It's that 6'7", 6'8", ball handler, shot creator who can go get his own and who can make everyone around him better. And you look at Luka Doncic, you know, he's the prime young example. You look at what Chris Middleton did in the finals. That's like Cade's floor. That's like if he busts, right? he's Chris Middleton. And he also has that, like, yearning for the ball in his hands late in games. So, again, you can nitpick him. Some teams are. They're saying, oh, he's slow. Who does he get by? All that. Like, that's to me, that's outdated. The game has changed, and he's a perfect fit.
So the outdated aspect of that, though, explain that. Why is that not so much a concern in 2021, given the way the modern game is played?
Well, one, you can't really touch anybody, right? So it used to be so much about, like, oh, can he beat his man off the dribble, right? Like, oh, can he get by him, you know? And I think if you have positional size, IQ, a sure enough handle, and can shoot the ball and pass, then you get pretty much wherever you want on the floor. I mean, you know, it was a lot of the same concerns about Luka, to be honest. And I've said the Luka thing, and I like that's a best case, right?
That's
like,
the ceiling, sure.
That's the ceiling. Like Luka Doncic is on track to maybe be one of the all-time greats. Whereas Cade, like I'm not sure he's gonna reach Luka Doncic level, but it's that same prototype. It's those same questions. Can you just put the ball in his hands? Can he get by anyone? Can he be this big point guard? Like I say absolutely. He's as complete as a prospect as I can remember evaluating, just in terms of, okay, maybe he's not quite as elite of a passer as Luka, but he still has the one-handed skip passes, the right hand, left hand, all that. It's not quite as elite as Luka, but really good. Catch and shoot. He can really catch and shoot. He can shoot off the dribble. He was the number one, the most efficient isolation player in all of college basketball last season. So to me, that's not a guy who should have questions about whether or not he can go get you one. And then the one thing we haven't really talked about most with him, he has a 7'2 wingspan and like pretty good defensive toughness, you know? So I think this is a guy who can also add value, you know, on the defensive end of the floor.
But after Cade, Mike, it does seem like there's something of a drop-off, which gets us to Jalen Green and to Evan Mobley. So how do you differentiate between those two guys, and how much distance is there between them and Cade Cunningham?
Yeah, really, really close between these two. And again, I do want to say that, like, Cade, yes, we've been banging the drum, overwhelming favorite, but there are some very, very highly respected voices within the NBA, some of which who believe in 3-4 years, Jalen Green will be the best player. Some of which believe Evan Mobley in 3-4 years could be the best player. So that's the type of upside that you're talking about here. I still think Cade is kind of in a tier of his own, and then these two in the next group. But I started the year kind of Evan Mobley over Jalen Green just because he plays both ends of the floor. But just looking at how valuable shot creation is in today's game.
Oh, watching the playoffs, man, it's sort of like, of course it comes down to shot creation every single time, pretty much.
Every time. And so for Jalen Green, like, you have one, an effortless athlete. Like, I mean, he's been described, you know, million-dollar legs, right? That's what scouts will say about him. Like, that's the way he moves. That's the way he runs. That's the way he explodes off the ground. Just like an ideal athletic profile from a physical sense. And then you add in the fact that this kid just averaged 18 points a game in the G League bubble, an efficient 18 points a game, like over 50% from two, over 35% from three, improved defensively, showed some playmaking chops. And so I think he's the second best prospect in the draft because the importance of the shot creation, the athletic piece, and the fact that he's productive and does it in ways that you see in the NBA. And then on top of that, maybe my favorite thing about this kid, every time I leave a film session with him, I'm just like, man, I love that kid. He's just very raw and he's very real. And so I think fan bases are going to love, wherever he goes, they're going to love that. They're going to love that, like, he wants to dunk on you, you know? And he wants, he's basically like, listen, I'm sick of, like, hearing about these other guys. He's like, I'm the guy, you know? And he's backed it up with his play. And so his potential is through the roof.
Yeah, and as a Filipino-American, of course, I root genetically for Jalen Green, half Filipino himself. But so let's say Houston ends up getting him. Cleveland then would presumably get Evan Mobley, and what arrives at the doorstep if it's him?
Woo! I mean, another special talent. So what I also love about this top three is these guys are all very different. Okay, so we're talking about, you know, Cade and that maybe Luka mold. We're talking about Jalen Green and that maybe Brad Beal type of, like, potential NBA leading scorer, honestly. And then Mobley, you're talking about, like, a little bit of Anthony Davis, a little bit of Chris Bosh, like that type of defensive versatility, and then those type of glimpses offensively. Like, he's not, I've said this time and time again, he's not your dinosaur big. It's not like, you know, last year I understood the criticism of, hey, why James Wiseman at number two? Like, those type of bigs you can go get. Okay, like the run and jumps, like I know he's got a little bit more skill than that, but the run and jump, lob catching, rim protecting guys, like you can go get a Daniel Gafford or somebody like that for cheap, right?
Yes, you can discover who Daniel Gafford is midseason and be like, oh, wait a minute, yeah, that is the guy that does the things we need to do. But Evan Mobley, what does he have on top of the run and jump basic big stuff?
Man, like ball handling, feel for the game, passing, can step out and shoot the three. Selfless kid, too. Like as nice of a young man as you'll be around. Sometimes you want him to rev it up a little bit and be, you know, somewhat more assertive. But, you know, I remember watching him in high school, and he would bring the ball up. Like, he would play at times like a point guard. And so at 7 feet tall, to have that type of versatility, you know, I don't think he's a guy who can only play center either. You know, I think like we've seen with Anthony Davis next to, you know, whether it's Andre Drummond or JaVale McGee or whoever throughout his career, like he can play that role. Or he can slide up to the five once his body continues to mature. He switches as well as any big that I can remember, like guarding the perimeter. He's unbelievable. He has great shot blocking instincts. So the only question with him is like, okay, is he ever going to be like your number one or number two option offensively, right? As a scorer, like, is he wired to do that? Or is he more of a Chris Bosh when he was with Wade and LeBron, right? Like, he can be that really, really good third option on a championship team and then clean up everything defensively.
So the second best Jalen in this draft, I mean, it sounds like an insult, but it really shouldn't be, because Jalen Suggs, as you alluded to, like, I know he's not in that sort of second tier behind Cade, but how close behind is Suggs, and what is he bringing to a team from the jump that drafts him?
Yeah, I think he's in a kind of a tier of his own. Like, I view all those three guys as like franchise cornerstones, right? Whereas I think that Suggs is like a really good starter on a championship caliber team who will likely eventually become an all-star. And I think the prototype I've used for him is Jrue Holiday. You know, like, look at Jrue Holiday, okay? He's what, your third option offensively behind, you know, behind Giannis and Middleton, and he's your best perimeter defender, and he's incredibly durable, and everyone loves him. He wins like the greatest guy in the league award every single year, and he's tough as nails. Like, that's Jalen Suggs to me. And if you look at Holiday at the same age, I mean, he averaged 8 points a game at UCLA, I believe, right? And so this kid's even further ahead. Like, you can't find a better kid. You can't find a more competitive player, and he's going to win a lot of games and I think a championship or two throughout his career.
If you sort of base this draft, Mike, exclusively on like a single highlight for each player, I do feel like Jalen Suggs, I mean, I watched him in the tournament with Gonzaga, and what he did, I mean, there was obviously like the half-court buzzer beater.
Gonzaga has time to do something. Suggs for the win! Oh, yes! Unbelievable! Unbelievable! The perfect season remains ongoing.
Right, but then there's the other play, right, where it's a block out of nowhere of Cody Riley, I believe, of UCLA, into that assist.
Down the baseline, bounces it to Riley. Riley pinned by Suggs, clean block at the rim, pushing the other way. Timmy on the run, two-hand flush, defense to offense, the freshman.
How about Suggs stepping up? Just magnificent. What a ticker this kid has.
It does feel like Jalen Suggs has something about him that, I don't want to say clutch gene, but it does feel something special.
Yeah, no, well, first of all, you're deep in your bag for the Cody Riley cut. That's a great, great, deep memory, impressive stuff right in the duffel. But
yes.
So when you watch Jalen Suggs, every time I watched him, you get this feeling that like he's going to make something happen. You know, like, you're sitting on the edge of your seat like, okay, he's either going to like blow up this handoff for a steal and go thread the needle in transition with a bounce pass, or he's going to make a big shot, or he's going to step over for a charge. Like, he is a playmaker. That's what he does. And I think that comes from his football background, honestly. You know, like, you see a lot of his football instincts. Obviously was, you know, a stud quarterback, highly touted, but I think his steal rate is so high because of his anticipation. I think his ability to pass pass in the open court is so strong because of his you know, vision as a quarterback. And so I'm with you that he has something special about him that's hard to quantify, and that's why I even battle myself a little bit with him, like, man, like, you shouldn't put a ceiling on this kid, you know, because of just the way he's wired is different than a lot of these guys. And I will say, I didn't expect this from Jalen Suggs.
Me neither.
We had him, we had him in the mid to late teens. And part of that is on us because he went to a small high school, but credit to him for how he's developed and just the type of player and person that he is.
All right, after the break, I want to get deeper into your big board, Mike, and I want to examine the radically different path that modern prospects are taking to get there.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So when you spin around the globe otherwise, Mike, and you look at your big board, who else do you want us to know about in this draft? Because there are some other names that are really intriguing, but I'm curious, in your grab bag now of candidates here, who else is like worthy of lottery consideration?
There's a handful of names, and we can do maybe a little rapid fire here, but yeah, you know, Jonathan Kuminga is like, he's this kind of wild card in this draft. You know, he's the one that everyone's trying to figure out, where is he going to go and what type of player is he going to be? So 6'8" wing, originally born in Congo, moved to the United States as a young teen and started off the G League bubble. Like, I was getting text after text saying like, why don't you guys have Kuminga number one? Like, he's the best prospect. You know, he had, I want to say, 19 points, 4 assists in his first game, 24, 6, and 4 in his next, 23, 13 in his next. So, like, he was gangbusters to start out the G League bubble and then tailed off a little bit, you know, and you started to see some more of the flaws in terms of the shooting consistency, the decision making, the defensive motor. And so he has a wide range. I mean, some people think he might fall, you know, closer toward the back second half of the top 10, maybe all the way to 8, 9, 10. I think that's crazy talk. I mean, the kid still averaged 16, 7, and 3 in the G League at his age. That's not easy to do. But he's the one to have an eye on draft night, just because he's got this wide range and he's incredibly talented. So he's certainly a guy I'm watching. And then just a couple quick names, Josh Giddey. The 6'7" point guard out of Australia. He's a guy with a decent amount of buzz who is maybe the best passer in the draft. The last one, who is another kind of polarizing guy who you could see go in the top 6, is James Bouknight out of UConn. I think teams are trying to figure out, is this guy Jordan Clarkson? Like, just, he's just going to be a bench bucket. That's who he is. New York kid. He's got that New York swagger in game. Or is he going to turn into like a more complete player, like a Devin Booker? You know, like, can he become that? Is he going to be the next guy who people just saw as maybe a scorer, and then he continues to develop and become a better passer and become a better defender? So he's another divisive guy that I'm definitely going to have my eye on, and I think has one of the higher upsides of prospects projected outside the top 5.
So outside of the top 5, the top 10, the top 30, I mean, something that happens every draft, Mike, if we're honest with ourselves here, is that some seemingly random second rounder ends up being somebody that we all pay attention to in the NBA. Nikola Jokic, of course, goes from second rounder to MVP. That's an extreme, extreme case. But I think of Chris Middleton, who you mentioned as the floor for a Jalen Green. That guy was a second rounder too, was the closer for the Bucks, of course, winning the title. I know it's almost impossible to say who you don't like enough to make a first rounder, but you think is good enough to be one of these guys. But who is under the radar that is sort of sticking in your craw that you still don't know what to do with that has really high upside?
All right, I'm going to give you a couple guys here, okay? And they're not all projected in the second round, but they're kind of, some of them are in the fringe, maybe one a little higher that I just want to hit on. So yeah. Bones Highland.
I love that name already. I don't know anything else about him, but his name is Bones and I am in.
Oh, he's the best. I mean, Nashawn is his name, is his first name, goes by Bones. So he is from Delaware, okay? The pride of Delaware. he and Dante DiVincenzo, two Delaware greats. But he lit the world on fire at the NBA Combine. I mean, like pull-up three after pull-up three, threading the needle with passes, using his length, and he's incredibly confident. He won Conference Player of the Year. He shoots it from like 35 feet. He's really skinny. You know, he needs to improve defensively and a little rough around the edges, but crazy backstory, man. Like, he was basically had a house fire out in Delaware when he was coming up through the ranks in high school, and, you know, lost a few family members and had to jump out of his house and had sustained a really bad injury in the midst of his high school career that kind of, you know, led to him slipping through the cracks a little bit. And he ends up at VCU and improves. And here he is, a potential first-round pick who I think, you know, can make an impact right away. Dayron Sharpe is another guy I look at UNC. He was a potential lottery pick. Best rebounder in the draft. Big body, great hands, great touch. Played at North Carolina where they usually play multiple bigs, so I think he might look better in the NBA. And then the last one I want to hit on, okay?
Yeah.
Alperen Şengün. I'm highly intrigued by the Turkish big man that I went to spend some time with this year out in Istanbul. We have him as a potential lottery pick, but I think he's worth talking about because Şengün, he was that like overweight, productive kid who always put up numbers on the FIBA circuit and you'd say, all right, like, I don't know what to make of this. He'll probably be good in Europe. And then this season starts and he dropped, you know, like over 20 pounds and was putting up historic numbers in the Turkish league, which isn't really what it used to be, but still a very good level. Okay. 18 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 65% from 2, steal and a half, block and a half in like 28 minutes. I mean, he won MVP of the Turkish league at 18 years old, right? And so here's this kid who doesn't completely look the part, but I went back there like 3 times on my European trip because I was like, man, I need to figure him out more. I was so intrigued. And I remember sitting there at a practice and just watching him knock down like step back threes and thread the needle with behind the back passes. And I'm like, if you squint hard enough, okay, there's like a little bit of like a mini Jokic at times with what he does and the footwork and the way he moves. And so I'm just like enamored with what this kid is going to become. And listen, maybe he's like a backup center forever who just rebounds and gets roasted defensively. But if he lands in the right situation, there's something a little bit special about his hands, his touch, and his feel, and that's one I'm going to be watching as he progresses.
So the international route has always been something of a mystery to us Americans, but it strikes me, Mike, in this latter part of our conversation now, that a couple of the guys you've been discussing in Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga, they're coming from an entirely brand new, mysterious developmental pipeline here in America called the G League Ignite. And you had joined us in January to explain that whole program, which is run by the NBA, but its existence speaks to this larger upheaval we're seeing across college basketball and the entire experience of being a draft prospect in the first place. So let's take stock of that for a moment here. Remind our listeners, if you could, what the G League Ignite is and bring us up to speed about how that whole experiment played out this year.
Yeah, so basically it's multiple prospects. You know, this past year it was those two that you mentioned. It was Isaiah Todd, it was Dacian Nix. And basically they're on a G League team that's different than your typical G League team. You know, it's built with the understanding that it's about these players' development. And so, you know, you have some former vets, NBA vets, Amir Johnson, you know, Jarrett Jack, guys like that who maybe, you know, wouldn't have been on any other G League team, right? And so it was basically structured for the development of these prospects. And, you know, they get paid a salary and endorsements and incentives. And, you know, Jalen Green making upwards of, $500,000. Jonathan Kuminga the same. And so the thought process has been just to, prepare for the draft like an NBA player, have NBA coaching, have facilities, and then be able to compete at a little bit of a higher level, you know, shooting from the NBA three-point line, playing, you know, a 48-minute game with a 24-second shot clock against guys who have played in the NBA. And so that's kind of the refresher of, you know, what the goal of this project is. And, you know, definitely from a marketing standpoint, like, I'm sure Jalen Green would have loved to have been talked about on SportsCenter every night like Jalen Suggs, you know? I'm sure of that. Who wouldn't, right? I think that's natural. And who's to say that if you swap those two and Jalen Green was on that Gonzaga team, who's to say that, you know, maybe they win the national championship and we're talking about, man, like the debate between Cade Cunningham and Jalen Green, you know? That's certainly a possibility, but I do think that it ended up being a good platform for Jalen Green, a place where he was really productive, a place where Jonathan Kuminga, you know, was very productive because, you know, college is a risk too. Like sometimes it's just not what you expected, right? Or sometimes you're not ready for a certain style or whatever it is. Like the NBA and college are almost two different sports, you know? So I think when you look at it through that prism, I think it was a success for Jalen Green. He's probably going to go in the top two. You know, I think Jonathan Kuminga as well, a success for him. I mean, you would have liked to see him finish the G League season and have a little bit more consistency. But I do think those guys are a success. And then you look at Isaiah Todd, he might go in the first round. You know, Dacian Nix might hear his name called. So if all four of those guys get drafted and three of them are in the first round, two of them potentially in the top five, and they did all that in a pandemic season, I do think that the G League has to look in the mirror and say job well done.
And the G League, Mike, is just one option on a growing menu that these teenagers have in front of them now, because I think of Overtime, the digital media company that announced that they're launching their own developmental league, and they're signing high schoolers to million-dollar deals. And so with name, image, and likeness possibilities, which means options to make money as a college athlete, if you're advising one of these prospects on all of these options in front of them now, what would you recommend?
One, I would say go somewhere where you're going to be challenged and where you're going to get better. I mean, I think it's different for different caliber guys as well, right? Like you look at Jalen Green. You know, Jalen Green could have done the Overtime Elite if that was a thing, and he still would have gone, you know, in the top five. Could have gone to the G League Ignite, still go in the top five. Go to college, still go in the top five. There are those guys who they're so talented that no matter where they go, they're going to go in the top five. The reality is the rest of the world is not that way, right? And I'm watching, you know, almost two basketball worlds develop. There's players with a huge social media following and the gym is packed, right? and it's standing room only and everybody's there.
This is the Bronny James economy.
Right, exactly. And I'm not knocking Bronny James. I mean, he's a talented young prospect in his own right. He plays the right way. He's competitive,
sure.
But the reality is, like, I was at several games with future NBA top 10 picks, lottery picks, with very little people in the stands. There's no rah-rah. There's no internet buzz about it. And so what I always tell young prospects who want to be great in the NBA, I say, look at what's successful in the NBA right now, okay? Jrue Holiday. You watch his game, he's not someone who would look great in a highlight reel, right?
Jrue Holiday is not a clout king in the NBA ecosystem.
Not a clout king. Okay, Giannis, where did he come from? Steph, where did he come from? Paul George, multi-year player. Kawhi, multi-year player. Yes, we have Lucas. Yes, we have LeBron's, guys who were highly touted. Kevin Durant, but Damian Lillard, Klay Thompson.
Jokic, yeah.
Jokic, look at the guys having success in the NBA. They were not ranked high at a young age. And I'm the old man on the lawn, and I get it.
I'm with you.
But there's going to be a time when a group of young people realize that a lot of these players that have millions of followers on Instagram and they've thought as the best young players in the NBA, they're not going to play in the NBA. Like, the reality is they're not good enough, right? It's like finding out Santa Claus isn't real. You're like, wow, these guys I've been idolizing, wait a minute, they're not going to play in the NBA?
But they have millions of followers, Mike. They have millions of followers, and everyone is taking selfies with them.
But here's the good thing. For those players, now there's a way you can monetize that. You can make money. You can have a career, right? I just wonder, is that as interesting when you're 24 and you're playing in the German BBL, you know?
Mike Schmitz, thank you as always for evacuating the entirety of the ESPN Daily lawn.
Pablo, this was fun. Now I'm going to go get ready for this draft.
All right, coming up. The U.S. women just won gold in 3-on-3 basketball, a new Olympic sport that raises many, many questions.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Here's another story I want you to know. I am not going to lie, guys. Between men's basketball losing to France and Katie Ledecky's apparent mortality and USA Gymnastics now twisting in the air, it has been a tough opening week for the Americans. But there was a noticeable bright spot yesterday, as the red, white, and blue made history by taking home the gold in basketball, as called by NBC Olympics.
2 seconds left, and the United States of America is bringing home the gold in the first ever 3x3 Olympic competition.
Yes, 3-on-3 basketball made its Olympic debut in Tokyo. And while America's men failed to qualify, the women's team, made up of WNBA players Stephanie Dolson, Alicia Gray, Jackie Young, and Kelsey Plum, are now certified Olympic gold medalists in a sport that is extraordinarily different from 5-on-5. But not so different from what you might know from the playground. Because the game is played outside, on a half court, shots are worth 1 or 2 points, and the games are just 10 minutes long. In fact, my main complaint, as laid out by Justin Peters in a wise piece he wrote for Slate this week, is that 3-on-3 actually isn't playground enough. Like, why aren't the games make it take it? Why can't the players call and negotiate their own fouls? Peters also makes a brilliant point here. Every single team, I agree, should be forced to draft at least one player who just happened to be randomly wandering through the gym that day. Because the only way to guarantee the authentic pickup experience is to ensure the possibility that you might wind up checking a guy who refuses to take his ear pods out and is also wearing jeans. Now, you might say all of this is just a slippery slope towards Olympic one-on-one and Olympic knockout, and honestly, those are pretty great ideas, but at this point, I'd rather watch Steph Curry and Luka Doncic play Olympic horse than watch any of the events involving actual Olympic horses. So if anyone at the IOC is listening to this podcast, you have 3 years before the Summer Olympics in Paris to make this right. And seeing as how, and no, I'm not making this up, breakdancing will be making its Olympic debut in France, you might as well embrace the blacktop entirely. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.